Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Every December, the global surf community converges upon Hawaii for the Pipe Masters competition. It's the premier surf event on the professional world tour and the climactic season finale that often determines who will be the next world champion. Captivated spectators pack the beach to watch the action unfold just yards away from the shoreline. For surf fans, it's the best show on earth. But not this year. When the 50th annual Pipe Masters competition commences this week, it'll be held under strict COVID protocols, with a closed beach and without spectators. To celebrate the start of this legendary surf contest, we bring you a special episode of The Plug recorded on location in Hawaii after the conclusion of the 2019 Pipe Masters. It was a historic event that decided the world title, the Triple Crown, and the U.S. Olympic surf team for Tokyo. It's been a strange year, and we could all use a good laugh and some perspective. Today's guest is perfectly suited for that. He's a pro surfer with an innate gift for storytelling. His candid tales of loss and personal growth that were featured in the recent movie Momentum Generation helped create one of the most insightful and heartfelt surf documentaries of all time. Today, surfer, husband, filmmaker, restaurateur, raconteur, and dispenser of infectious laughter, the honorary mayor of the North Shore, Mr. Benji Weatherly.
Benji.
That's right, dude.
Thanks for sitting down, man. Super appreciate it. Oh, it's an exciting time to be over here, man.
What a day, yeah. Last night, I actually spent, I would say, about 9 hours at Pipe. And I drank tons of coffee in the morning, and I got down there early for Uncle Kelly. And I've been there for 28 of his Pipe Masters. Okay. I think he said 28 or 29 he's done. I've been there for every effing one. And I had this weird feeling all day that I was like nervous, and I was so way more involved this year than I've ever been. And it has zero to do with anything relevant.
Like, except, just emotionally?
Emotionally, I was like, this is, it's not the end of an era, because Kelly's been every era. I mean, that's the truth. But it was like, I don't want this to end. I got really upset thinking like he might lose in this heat. This might be the last Pipe Masters. I started going through all the different predicaments. And obviously we're in the Johnson's yard, where half the yard is the John crew. And it's just this crazy dynamic that it really overwhelmed me. So for like 9 hours from Kelly in the quarters, not having any waves with 7 minutes to go, and then getting a pretty good one and going, all he needs is this wave in 30 seconds, 20 seconds. And I see the wave, because I've been my whole life sat in the same chair and I know waves have pipe better than any wave in the world for me. And I saw it, and I was like, holy shit, he's going to get it right here. He's going to get the fucking wave. And it was so north winds that it was crumbly, but I could see that that wave was going to do it. I'm like, I can't believe he's going to do this. And right when he took off, he stalled a little bit. And when he stalled, everyone on the table was like, what is he doing? And I'm like, no, he's good, you guys. He's going to get it right here. This is crazy. And he got that one. And just that emotional roller coaster, gets to the semis, and he's going against the world title contender and all that stuff. And then having John there just lost and having his whole family pulling for him. And I want John in the Olympics more than anything. But I want Kelly just because I feel that Kelly isn't just a representative of the United States. I think he's representing the whole surf culture. I mean, he's way bigger.
If there's one name that anybody outside of surf knows,
it would be like having the golf tour, the Olympics there, just like they did a few years ago, the first time the golf's been there. But golf was back in the, I think they said the early 1900s. They did have golf in the Olympics. So it's not the very first time golf was there, but this is the very first time surfing is going to be in the Olympics. You got to have the Tiger Woods, the Jack Nicholson, you know, all the big sporting names. It's a Michael Jordan of surfing. So I was just pulling for the whole sport, you know. And I just think maybe it's better that he's going to be there as a representative of the whole sport, you know. I don't really think him going out there and winning a bronze or a silver or maybe even a gold would made even a as big an impact if he just shows up.
And he just needs to show up. He'll definitely have a presence.
He has to show up. I thought about it when I was talking to John's parent or mom. I was like, oh, Kelly's going. I'm like, he's still going to go. I go, he has to go.
Yes,
you know? And she was like, well, John beat him. And I was like, yeah, but he needs to be there with the United States, but to pump John
double
up. And you have Kelly Slater on your team as a representative. It can only be a positive for everything. And so, I don't know, it'll probably work out better the way it all worked out. But the fact that he won Triple Crown at 47, and he never surfs a Triple Crown, and the fact that he did it this year and won and you know, just making the semis and keeping it interesting, and it's just such a cool thing. So I got home last night, and the whole beginning of this rant was – I got home last night, went to bed at like 7:45. I went to bed 4 hours before I usually would because I was just so exhausted. I was like, I haven't had that, you know, that excitement in so long because it was just an incredible day for surfing. Like the fact that Brazil is representing such a level of surfing, on, it's taken us to another level from Brazil. It's so sick.
It's like, crazy.
They're so passionate, man.
Let me ask you this. Like when you talked about being on the lawn over at Pete Johnson's, like with the Kelly team and the John team. There was a little bit of competition yesterday, but not a direct matchup. I remember a couple years ago where they were actually surfing in the lineup together. Like, what was that?
It was trippy, man. And it gets weirder the more it goes into it because John is, I mean, to be honest, it was all of our friends. I was Jack Johnson's good friend. So, like, that yard represented my childhood. And before that, it was, you know, Petey and Trent had it, but it kind of came into it when it was me and Jack's generation because Petey and Jack kind of grew up at a house down the street a little bit more. So that yard represents my generation, which is Kelly and Shane and Ross and all of them hanging out at Jack's yard and then going through the 90s of Kelly winning every one of them or being involved in it. So the Johnsons were so behind it and everything like that. And then all of a sudden, you know, John becomes John, and he's a teenage kid, and he starts hanging out at the Johnsons because Kona, Jack's nephew, is really good friends with him. So just seeing it every year develop, it's John's yard now, you know, and like Kelly knows that. I mean, without me and maybe Keone Watson and Ross Williams and a couple other guys, it's really just about John in that yard now. So it's a trippy twist of fate or whatever evolution is. And to see it, it's cool. I mean, it's so cool because it couldn't happen to a better kid. I mean, John is the most amazing kid and surfer and person and, you know, every family thing you can think of. And so it couldn't go to a better place, but it is a trippy dynamic to see Kelly kind of pushed to the side a bit and being like, you would hear like a couple of little applause on that side because everyone loves Kelly a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
But then when John is like, and when he qualified for the Olympics, just there's so many incredible young little surfers and brothers and cousins and everybody so involved. It's really neat to see, but it is weird from my state because I was, You know, I saw Kona, which is Jun Jun's best friend. I saw his first luau when he was a baby on that yard. Trent Johnson had his first luau, and now they're dominating the North Shore. And
how do you think Kelly? How does he handle that element of like a passing the torch?
He won't let it go. Like he is the most respectful, best representation of any sport that's ever lived. I mean, we got to talk about somebody like Michael Jordan that never really got in trouble with drugs or alcohol or, you know, any bad press or any of that stuff. And he held it together pretty long. But Kelly's never done anything but represent our sport with such grace and such freaking amazing, you know, ability that no one's ever been that disciplined in any aspect of their life. It's almost like he's a Buddha. And I know he goes online and he trolls people and he gets involved with chat and stuff. And that's his almost like his default for being how present he is. Like the people that get upset with him being present on a level where he's like ranting about a fin design and this guy's coming at him from here. You can't get mad at that when you realize that that's why he still wants to beat Jon Jon. He still wants to go out and kick these kids' butts. When at 40, I just got past 40 a little while ago, and you just stop caring about trying to compete with these kids. You're like, it's their time, all this stuff. But for Kelly, he still gets upset if this kid makes a heat and he doesn't deserve it, or this guy's surfing, but he's not that good, you know, and he's going back and forth like when we were 20, you know, and it's like, you want to kind of get upset, like, so what are you thinking? Like, let him have it, but why? I mean, that's what makes him so great. Like Jake Burton was always the same thing. It's like, show me something. He was never, ever going to try to just retire or any of that. And I don't think Kelly should either. Like Kelly is the kind of person that's going to show what's possible and that he has.
I love the relationship that you guys have because obviously you guys love each other very much. You guys are very close, but you're one of the few people that I've ever really seen in his sphere that is willing to like tease him and kind of call him on his eccentricities because he's kind of a rare bird. Oh, yeah. And I mean, was it always like that? How did you get to that point?
I think when I finally became kind of relevant on the level of Kelly and our surfing abilities and like we were doing the same kind of things in life because I was a lot younger than him. So like when I was coming up, I was very intimidated by him. And when we traveled, he would make decisions and say whatever he wanted. And I'd just be kind of quiet. And then I started feeling like I was equal with him. And then I started going, and I have the personality that doesn't let anyone get away with anything. And so does he. So he will tell me like, hey, you look fat. And like, he'd give me shit and hey, you're not doing this. Or why are you riding that board and all these stuff? And I'd be like, oh, big brother, I'm going to kill you. But then I realized like, hey, I'm not going to sit around and wait for you because I'm your good friend and I'm not going to tolerate you doing certain things around me without me saying something because that's what a true friend is. A true friend is legitimately going to tell you exactly, and you should be able to say right back to him. And that's a real friendship. And I mean, it gets, there's times where I'll be at the lowest point of my life and there's been a handful of them and he's always there. And one of my good friends the other day said, you know, the first thing that happened when my mom passed away, Kelly called me and no one else called. Everyone texted, everyone did this, but Kelly called him straight away and said, I'll be at the funeral. And he goes, you don't have to. And he's like, I'll be there no matter what. And that's Kelly in a nutshell. It's like, he is, you know, a dork from Florida at times. And you're like, kind of like, what is this guy? And then there's other times you're like, how could this be Kelly Slater? Because he's the best friend I have. So he is around and relevant because of his ability, but it's his character that keeps him around the longest. I mean, there's no better character in any sport than Kelly
Slater.
That's
quite an endorsement coming from you.
He
seems almost a little paradoxical in the sense that he's on one level, he's very accessible. I mean, I'm talking about both from a personal level, but also just from a fan of the sport and people, you know, in the neighborhood. And I think maybe some of that has to do with the nature of surfing where it's, you're going to be in a public place, you're going to run into people in the sand. But at the same time, like he's very approachable. But at the same time, I feel like it's up to a certain level. And I've seen so many interviews with him. And you know, if you get him talking about whether it's golf or reading waves or nutrition, whatever his...
Swell
his,
maps.
Whatever, exactly. Yeah. Like whatever his topics of passion, he's very good. But I think you reach a threshold to some degree to being able to access him emotionally. Yeah. And I think that is why the Momentum Generation resonated so much with so many people is because, and to a degree, you too. I feel like you kind of stole the show with your candor and just open heart. And what was it about that production that allowed people to get into Kelly's head that have been people have been trying to do that for a generation.
I think it was because it was the most honest filmmaker, I should say filmmakers because it's Zemblis Brothers, that they came from a place that was, we've made the Bob Marley documentary, we've made the two Escobars, we made these documentaries that it's all about the subject being 100% forefront of the whole documentary. He's not going to ask questions about how many titles he won. And when they were making the documentary, they had three different guys come and go, the directors, and they finally got Zemblis. But the two other guys were, the way they were talking about making it, I was like, oh, this is going to be a Kelly Slater smut film. It's going to be Kelly is the best surfer of all time, and look at how amazing he is. And so I was just like, oh, whatever, this is going to be just another surf movie. And then when the Zemblis brothers started interviewing me, it was like a 10-hour interview. First, I saw the Escobars movie, and I saw the way they shot it and the way they approached each character in the film and how they pulled things out of them that took research. It took, you know, it took the questions had to be appropriate to bring real emotion out of these people. And when they started asking my questions, I knew exactly what I was in for. I went, oh, man, because the first question was something that nobody knew about me. Nobody knew.
They really did their research.
Oh, man. So much so that I couldn't believe it. Like every time they were firing questions right at me with all these angles in my eyes and everything. And I was like, oh, they got me. I was like, they got me. And it made me so happy because I was in a bad place at the time of that interview. And it made me happy to think that I'm going to show people that I don't have like this ego that's going to make me go, oh, you know, and stand up for all these stories in my life that are more sugarcoated. And I just went for it because I've always been good with interviews of being myself. And I was like, you know what? I'm letting it go. I was like,
was there some point where you found your heart coming out?
I just have nothing to lose. I have nothing to lose. Like I always been, everything's on my sleeve, and I've never felt like whatever I am as a human being to people is always going to be up to them to decide anyway. And I might as well just be a 100% who I am, because my flaws are always right in front. It's like, here I am. Like, I know I'm not perfect. I know I don't want to be, but I'm around a lot of people that almost are, and I can tell you about them, but I'm not that. And I'm okay with that. That's why I'm a happy person, is because I'm okay with not being the guy that can hold it together every single day, every 24 hours a day, like Kelly. I mean, I can't even believe he can do it. Like when we hang out, I hang for 6 hours as hard as I can and be as forefront as I can in present. And then I go and I'm like, whoa. And I have to go like decompress by myself and do things on my own. And he's still there with some guy talking about his airbrush from when he was 18 on the Florida board. And there's just people coming and going, and he just deals with it. And he's like levitating, getting a massage, and he's on his cell phone, and there's just so much. And at the end of the day, he never loses it. He just sits there and just deals with it. And the next day he wakes up and he has another amazing day where Brad Pitt comes in and gets surf lessons. And then after that, he's doing yoga. And then the freaking Dalai Lama just decided to stop by to do a text for a tweet out on the, it's just like, what? Everything he does is just like, how did that just happen? Bradley Cooper and freaking Lady Gaga just sang to me for breakfast. You know, everything about his life is not normal, but the fact that it never affected who he truly is probably the biggest achievement of his life.
Do you think that, and I know from conversations that we've had, and but you think for Kelly, and you can speak on this well, like it must have been very cathartic to be that candid and that honest, and to just, it must be nerve-wracking and scary, but put it out in the world and have people respond
people
so positively.
Really well. And I think that's been one of the greatest things, is that it showed my mom, for one. So it was more authentic because they saw where I came from. I think that helped a lot. It did for me. It really made me feel good to see my mom. And then Todd Chester was my best friend. And when he died, he was my roommate. And he was everything to me. And I lost everything. And I was 21. And I was like, what the hell am I going to do now? I was like, I used him as my crutch. And he was everything to me. And now he's gone. So I had to like reel it in and try to find my place in the pack and see if I can still pull it together. And for 4 years, I was a mess. So I have a lot of confusing things happening at my adolescence that I had to reel it in and then pull it back in. And luckily I had the Kellys and the Shanes and Ross that really took me under their wing when they were dealing with the same thing, but 4 years older. But the fact that they were like, this little punk is not going to fall away on the wayside. We're going to take care of him. Is, I mean, that the reason why I was so honest in that movie is because I have that kind of support. Like, I know that those are going to be my friends no matter what I say, which is, it's great because they know at times they're like, that's just Benji or whatever, but they never judge me for it, you know? That's great.
That's, I feel like that movie, the Momentum Generation movie, was really effective because it kind of threaded the needle. And I think in the sense that it only could have been done as it was from a perspective outside of the surf industry.
Yeah, and like, that's where I was trying to say.
You couldn't have somebody inside making that. But at the same time, like, I just watched the HBO piece that they did on Kelly, and I feel like that went too far the other way. Yeah. That's like, okay, these are people who ride surfboards. It's called surfing. This is Kelly Slater, you know. And, and there's a time and place for that, but it wasn't insightful. Been.
That's why it was so great, is that they really did take all of our stories and go as hard as they could in the paint, because they realized, like, everyone's already seen these guys doing golfing and surfing and being in airplanes and having a rad life. That gets so tiresome, even for me to watch. And it was my life. And I'm like, pumped my chest for years doing that. And then I realized, like, you know what? We did the drive-through TV shows. And what people always came up and still do today and tell me is, that was the coolest show on earth, because I legitimately thought I was on those trips with you guys. I really thought, like, when you're yelling about your surfboard being hurt on the airplane and fucking complaining about traffic and doing that, I felt like I was in the van with you laughing and fucking having a good time. And that reality TV show is what really set in motion, was like, there's more to this than just airs and music and stuff. And it was like, when the Zimbalist Brothers, I think the best documentary guys that we could have ever got, and best out there.
Oh, fantastic.
They just went, look, Slater's the best surfer in the world, but what made him that? And like, they actually went and did the homework and did the research. They had 7 years to do it, and they had 9 editors, and they did it on such a level that it was undeniable. And that's why I love the movie. It's undeniable. If you don't surf or you don't do any of it,
my parents love it. And anyone's parents come up.
People have been coming to my restaurant that are 50 years old, that are from New York City, and say, this is my 50th birthday, and I decided I want to come here and meet you and your mom. And I'm like, what? And they're just like, it was the best movie we've ever seen, and all of a sudden they resonate. These are people that, if I put in like Taylor Steele's Momentum movie, they'd be like, turn it off. What is happening? Or like, you know, any surf movie, they'd be like, I don't get this. But that one is like, it brought people kind of into our circle and was like, wow, these guys have some weird stuff going on.
It's not humanity and honesty, it's not
Mai Tais. It's real life, man.
I mean, I guess that's the irony of how reality TV is just taken over, and everybody has this phone and they kind of purport to document every moment of their life, but
it's
like an avatar. Exactly. Yeah. You only put the butt shot
or the cocktails, tears. It's never the real stuff.
And then there's very few people, you know, occasionally people, you know, putting stuff out there that about real talk, like depression, or, you know, like the things that aren't all positive. But, you know, I think that's why that movie resonated so well. It was just so...
Yeah, it's been therapeutic for me in so many ways. I've had so many people come up to me and have long talks about like how they went through the same thing and have all this stuff going on in their lives. Same with the drive-thru. Like, they're like, dude, I was so depressed. And then we decided, why don't we get an RV and go down the coast of Australia with our friends? And they would do that trip, and I'd be like, that's a surf movie that I like being a part of, is that these kids went and did what they're like, we did our own drive through. And I was like, oh my God, that's so cool. And then you'll hear the guy that'll watch a Momentum movie and like quote like some random thing I say on the thing. And he goes, dude, this is my life quote now. And it's like something random that I said. And it makes me feel important. Like, my guys would come up and be like, you're my favorite surfer when I was little. And I'd be like, that's cool. And it never made me feel like someone saying something that I said in that movie that made them feel whole or so. I'm like, dude, stop it. Like, that to me, because my whole thing was I never wanted to be a pro surfer. I just wanted to be around it. I just wanted to be funny and be around my friends. And then I had to perform to keep it going. Like, I was like, oh, I got to get a really good part now, because if I don't have sponsors and I can't be around all these fun people and do all this rad shit.
You just love the culture and the fraternity.
Like, it makes me uncomfortable when I go to surf contests, because everyone's on earphones and everyone's riding psycho bikes and they're all trying to beat each other. And for me, surfing was always a thing. Like, I was always out there to have so much fun, because everybody else in sports, because my dad was a gnarly NFL football player, he was a jock, and I never wanted to be that, because I wanted it to be something like that, get away from that. Like, I always wanted to get away from sports, which I love sports, but I love the fact that surfing wasn't a sport. So when I see everyone taking it so serious, I'm like, God, you guys are missing the boat. But that's what's great. You can choose whatever you want. But for me, it was always about like Taylor Steele's movies in the beginning. We making those skits where all we did is make fun. Like seeing Kelly Slater make fun of himself when he was in the peak of his career, 22, just won the world title. And we're like, you're doing this skit. You're going to look like an asshole. That to me made it better. It made everything like, look, even this guy will take the piss out of himself to make us all laugh. And that brought us together, because when he was being serious and being like, I got to get my own car and I got to do this and I got to sit in front of the serve, then none of that was positive for the sport, for him. He became very disconnected from his true friends. Now, they say it in the movie, like, I remember there was 10 years where he didn't even, when you saw him, he looked so miserable and he was just there to win. And it was just like this weird existence. And people, all they want to do is tell him how rad he was, but he wasn't happy. He wasn't happy. The happiest he gets is when we're in Gold Coast and we go to Thai food together and we're making each other laugh. Like those moments he missed because he was just by himself with a girlfriend sitting in the house.
But those are the moments that make you happy when you're 12. Like all you spend your whole life trying to just recreate those moments with you riding bikes with your best friends, you know?
Totally.
In the middle part of your life. And I think at the end, you finally like are old enough to realize it.
And luckily he got it back. And now he's the best friend all of us have. That's what's so cool, right? I mean, I'm down there freaking high-fiving him and excited for him at 44, and I'm like, dude, we got this. We're like, I never did that when he was younger. Like, I'd be there at the contest, but I was like, kind of like, I was embarrassed to even say, like, yeah, Kelly, because he was like, of course I'm gonna win. Of course. But now he was so pumped when he got the freaking 10 or did really good the other day and got the wave at the last second. He's looking at me like, I did it. Like, we're like kids. Like, he didn't even act that way when he was a kid. That's what's so amazing for me. I was younger than him when he was 12, he was already like a killer. He was like, I'm gonna win everything. So to see him, like when I won the golf thing the other day, the Golf Geeks, to see this guy had footage of Kelly filming it, and he's laughing, dude, laughing the hardest. He's like, ah! And he's like almost falling over. And it was the happiest I've ever been in my life with Kelly. I was like, I made Kelly so happy at that moment to see him red in the face from smiling and saying, this is the best golf day ever.
It's amazing.
It made me feel like there's a different thing going on now in our relationship.
How did he get to that point, though? What changes happened in his life?
He does so much self, inner self work. Like, he does therapy, he does holistic stuff. He's always reading, he's always researching, he's always trying to better himself, and it's working. I mean, that's why Kelly is always going to be the person I look to for advice, because he's not. I went to I went to rehab in the Big On for a month, and it was called in-house, whatever. And I had to stay in a house, but every day I got to go to the gym and I got to go do certain things. Every fucking day he would show up in the morning and tell me, you are my inspiration. What you're doing is something that I dream of doing. And that was, I did it for drugs and alcohol, and I was in a really bad thing with my father and all this stuff. I did it because I was in a bad place, and it was mainly because of drugs and alcohol and all this other stuff. But he would tell me, like, what I'm doing is so powerful that he wants to do something better for himself. And he did it every single morning. He was at 5 a.m. I'd wake up because I can't sleep, and I would text him, and he would already be awake, and he would drive over to my freaking house where I was in rehab, and he would sit there in the car and we'd talk. We went, finally, when I got relief, I could go surf. He'd take me surfing. He stayed the whole 30 days, dude. And it's so trippy to think, like, this is right in his peak. This is 10 years ago. He was right in the middle of winning a world title. He took 30 days off, sat on the Big Island, and waited to hear every day how I was doing, and then told me that I was his inspiration. And I was just like, come on already. Like, that to me has always resonated as, like, I'm so lucky.
If you can count on one hand friends that are that good, like,
all my friends that I drink with, hang out, you know, guys that are like, this is my best friend because we golf and, you know, do drugs together and we party. But he was the one that was there, you know, the guy that was the most popular fucking sport athlete in the world. And he's there when he doesn't have time. He shouldn't be there. And he's there.
Was it bizarre to be at a point in our life where things that you probably remember pretty vividly and clearly, like the whole Pipe House era, like, you're at that point now where that's being memorialized, mm-hmm. and looked back at as something that was, you know, like, oh, this is something that wants to be, that we should document and talk about. I mean, does that era seem like a distant future, or did it go by in a flash?
No. That time of my life is the only time that I can remember by the minute, by the day, by the second, because, you know, Todd Chester passing. When they made the movie, I made an action sorts movie. It's called Life as a Movie. Because every good friend of mine that wasn't involved with, you know, surfing or anything like that, they go, dude, because they would hear what I did. They'd be like, well, you just did that. Your life is a movie. You know, they're like, your life is a movie from the good and bad. Like, I have the highs and I have the lows that nobody can even imagine. And I don't mean nobody can imagine. I don't mean that disrespectful. I mean, like, I just, for some reason in my life, I have a good day. I know a bad day. It's like up and down. I have these. You know, I fly in a private jet to go on this trip, go snowboarding. The next week, my best friend dies. And this, I've lost so many people in my life. And I think it's because I'm so blessed, because I know so many great people. And with great people comes loss. I mean, that's the truth. Like, your friend that you've gone to high school with that's never left home, they're probably not going to pass away at an extreme death. But I have all these friends that died surfing, snowboarding, doing all these things because they hang out with freaking and really, really great people. So I just think more than anything, I just feel so blessed to, you know, to have the highs, and I feel really blessed to have the lows because they teach me stuff. So, but my life is a movie. There's no way around it. I mean, having Metallica play at my wedding to having a Blink write a song with my name to growing up next door to Jack Johnson and him becoming big, to having Kelly Slater as one of my best friends when I wanted to be a pro surfer. Like, none of it really seems like that should be happening, but it all happened.
There's something about you in particular that allowed, let me ask you this. So I've gotten to shoot a lot of celebrities in my career, and I almost always have my camera with me. That's my device. You know, I'm not necessarily,
and I never see it.
And I'm not necessarily.
I joked about that the other day. I go, my best photographer friend in the world, but I've never seen him with a camera. But you always have it. But you never are obnoxious with it, which is such. It's like there's only a couple of surf photographers in the world. That Seth Stafford is one of them. But they legitimately are fly on the wall, which I think is where you get the magic. You get your magic if you're fly on the wall. When you're doing this and you're all around it, it's not magic. It's not magic. And I think you've always been my favorite fly on the wall photographer. That all just that Italo photo on you posted today. It's so insane, dude.
Thank you.
You get these photos, I'm like, what the hell? Like, how did you get that? Because you're not all, you just get it and you're like, later, guys.
But that's like, in a sense, that's my defense mechanism to be in a situation like that where I'm not necessarily maybe deserving or comfortable being in that situation. Right. Otherwise, I feel like, it's funny, people have asked me like, oh, is there, in all the people you've met, all the celebrities, whether it's surf or whatever, is there someone that you are the most starstruck about? And I guess my answer would be, rather than one person 100%, I'm probably like maybe 40% of everybody, you know? And it's like, it's so difficult to act normal around very famous people. And totally. It's like driving next to a cop. Like, you're like, you know, you're like doing your best to like act normal, but it's just never quite right. 100%. That said, I feel like you have this really terrific ability to be adaptable and charming and garrulous in so many different scenarios. Like, what do you think it is about? I mean, like you said, like, you have so many amazing people in your sphere, and everyone loves to have you in there.
I've been putting his cameras in my face since I was 11. Like, it's just always been in my face. And I mean, if you watch the Momentum Christmas video, they called it. Remember, it's called the Christmas video. And I think I'm like 12 or 13 in it. And they put the camera in, and they go, what do you think about all these guys at your house? I go, I hate it. And I look like my mom when she's getting filmed because I'm so uncomfortable. I'm like, please don't film my face. Like, ugh. And then after time, I did so many of surf movies and people put it in my face. And then I became comfortable with it because it took a long time for me to be really comfortable. And then I have this personality from my mom. And I seem to enjoy the fact that I'm so blessed to have somebody even care to take my photo rather than be entitled, because there was a tenure where in the middle of my career, I became such a little prick. I remember even being like, I got to go to a promo. And I remember going, I got to go sign autographs at a surf shop in Huntington Beach. And I was pissed. And I remember thinking, and I think I was with Kalani and a couple other friends. And I remember thinking, how stupid do we sound? I go, I can't believe we're both like arguing about how stupid it is that we have to go do our job. And then,
and it's a pretty amazing job.
It's the best job in the world. And I remember like turning the corner going, what am I thinking, man? And Kalani was really entitled at the time as well, lost all his sponsors, and he turned the switch and now is so grateful for every minute and watching his Instagram and watching Kalani do it. And trust me, there was a tenure where he was just as bad as I was. We both turned the corner and realized, I remember sitting in the car with him. I'm going, dude, you got to realize how lucky you are to have all these sponsors. And he didn't hear it. And it took for all of them to go away for him to go, what the hell happened? Because both of us were good people inside, but you can be tainted from the fame. It's not even fame, because being a pro surfer, you're not that famous. Like, people get your autograph and they take pictures, but
it's all relative. It's people yessing you. Yeah, it's people giving you what you want.
I guess it's true. We were getting your phone would never stop ringing. Remember when I turned 38, my last contract, I just signed my last contract, and the phone legitimately stopped ringing. Like, it stopped ringing. Like, the mags, the fuel TV, all this stuff just stopped happening. And I remember thinking, fuck, I didn't think this would happen. But you don't think it, because your ego is so involved with, of course this is always going to be my life. But it's not even a life. It's a thing. Life is what makes you happy every day. Like, the surfing career is like, that was just a tiny blimp. It was all the stuff I got out of that surf career that's become my life. The trips with Jake Burton, going to hang out with Kurt Hammond on surf trips, and doing all these things came from my surf career. So that's my real life. Having kids now and going, that's all my life. The surf career wasn't a life. It was just this thing. It was my job. But more than anything, it got me to where I am now. And whew, I think traveling and getting to experience the cultures that we get to in surfing, I always laughed at snowboarders and skateboarders, because they're like, we're going to this place in this little crappy town. I'm like, I'm going to Tahiti.
There's this really cool graffiti underpass.
And so I was always just like, oh my God, we're so lucky. I get to learn Indonesian. I get to do this, Bahasa, and all these different cultures. And you learn how to cook their food. And I was traveling with an Indonesian best friend, and he would make me beef rendang and curries. And I'd be like, these other kids wouldn't even know what that means. And so I just think surfing became more than just my little surf career. It became who I am, for sure.
So looking back, you know, getting back to the Momentum movie, how you've kind of encapsulated this era and tried to kind of explain it to people so that they could understand why it was so important. Do you have any regrets on how things turned out, either for you personally or for the sport? Like, did you see things? Was it on a trajectory where you thought, like, you're going to be this, or the sport's going to be this?
Didn't really set goals, which is pretty rad, because I never wanted to be world champ. I never said it. I never went to my sponsors. I'm like, I'm going to win the tour. Never had that in my mind. So it was never going to be something that happened, because all the things I put my mind to and set my goals, I did. I achieved all of them. I was like, I'm going to be in Taylor Steele's movie this year. And every year I would have to, you had to work so hard and get lucky and get the music that you needed. And all these things would have to come together. And then for sponsors, you know, I'd be like, I got to get sponsored by them. And I had to make this much money to pay for all these things. And I would work to get that. And then, like, the TV show came into play. And then getting to do all these different movies, and with Billabong making a couple of surf movies. And so all the things that I put my energy into, I achieved. I kind of wish I would have put my energy into maybe one other thing that would have been more lasting, would have been more, you know, like, after my career with surfing, which I'm trying to do now. Like, I'm going to do a podcast as well. I'm going to do more creative.
You'll crush it.
Yeah, and I can't wait. It's going to be my next goal. But more than anything, I needed a break for a while. Like, this movie came at the end of my career, and it's been so fun and everything, but I haven't even been able to enjoy it because I'm running a restaurant. I just got married, and I have all these things going on in my life. So I'm looking forward to the next step being, you know, trying to come up with something creative in the surf industry that they don't have right now, because we lost so much creativity with there's no TV anymore. Like, I keep talking about Fuel TV, but that was like our only outlet we had. We could do fun TV shows, or I had my movie I put on there, and I did all these things. And then that outlet's gone. So we need definitely to have more content. And then it's just like you said, print media being gone. There's no editorial stuff you can work with. There's nothing. So I just really want to try to get something going with the surf industry that'll bring comedy back, because there's not much fun in surf anymore. There's no surf fun. Even the surfer pole, and those guys have been my friends forever. Watching it this year was so depressing. I was just like, because the young kids don't have any incentive to go anymore, because it's not anything except just like, hey, this guy won this for being rad. And this guy, there's no entertainment. Like, you go there and you're like, there's no entertainment. This isn't funny. This isn't cool. This is just a bunch of people getting awards. So we need to come up with another event. Like, a youth surfer pole in California was so dope. It was legitimately an event. Like, you go there's a red carpet. You would see celebrities. And then the event was huge. It looked like Academy Awards. And when you'd get up on stage, you were actually nervous and like, holy cow, surfing is big. So we just need another event, and I really want to get more involved with that. Who knows where it's going, though? Like, we don't even really have an industry anymore, which is trippy.
Such a name. Like, and with Hurley being sold, I'm just like, I could not that was the last of the Mohicans anybody too. Other than John on the Hurley team.
I totally agree. It's a scary time, but that's maybe the best time to be creative. Maybe we could come up, like you said, WSL and all these things. Like, they need content, and they need something that's authentic. They need something authentic, like even watching the WSL breaks and stuff. And a lot of it's just information. It's not really authentic. It's not anything that really knocks me off my chair or anything.
Yeah, that's why it was really kind of special for me to come over and premiere my book this year. It just really seems like it's kind of like a benchmark of an era. And I mean, at the time I've been coming, it's a relatively short amount of time. Obviously, you can speak to this much larger, but just in the changes that I've seen, whether it's like social media and then like, you know, the Brazilians and just like, there's just not, even last year was like the Metallica party at Billabong was probably
the coolest thing.
That's probably the pinnacle of North Shore party ever going to happen.
Yeah.
And you contrast that with this year, like Billabong, they didn't even have both houses. Hurley had the house next door. Zero parties. Yeah. Like there wasn't much.
Yeah.
And I don't think that was strictly budgets or bad timing. I think it's just the culture is just changing.
I 100% agree with that. And that Billabong party, just because it was Parco's party, was why it was anything. If it was just a Billabong party, it probably would have been strangers. But since Parco, everyone loves him. And that's why everybody, like, you know, like Parco started like a culture with Billabong. Like, he had the guys, like even Connor Coffin, all them showing up. All those people were there for Parco, and then obviously the band and all
and
that
in
stuff.
In the pit too, like Steph like Gilmore, Andy, Taylor Steele, yes. Like Connor Coffin, like in the pit, just it's like, but like Andy laughing won, like crazy.
When Andy used to win, and they were always having the parties at the Bruce Volcom house, which was my old house. It went from the Momentum Generation where it was a little bit cleaner, you know, obviously there wasn't as much drugs and alcohol and stuff. It was more of like a celebration of the surf industry at the time. I mean, cause everyone was thriving. Our generation was about like Quicksilver, Billabong, all these companies thriving, and people in Arizona wearing Kelly Slater shirts and shit, to the Andy generation, which was a pretty amazing time for parties and camaraderie. I mean, there were Australians like Taj and everybody at that party raging for Andy winning the world title. And it was a rad time. I mean, they had killer bands playing and even you like can-
The culture
you can,
was strong. Yeah, the it was like was a Hawaiian strong, culture was strong.
Like they had like the Kalas and Kyborgs. And I mean, they were holding it down. It was amazing. And then like Parco's was the last like kind of party like that, because everyone loves Parco so much and Metallica is so amazing. That it's like, where else do we go from there? Because now all these young kids are so detached. Everyone's got their own program.
Everyone's in their own house on their computer.
Owen's with his family. Julian's with his family. Philippe's with his. I mean, it's a whole different world now. Like, it's really just about the individual. And that's where our culture.
I feel like even the crowd yesterday at the finals, like, I mean, there was a lot. It was the finals, but like, not even as deep as when Gabe won his title 4 years ago, whatever. I mean, it was like people just, I guess maybe that's testament to the broadcast improving, or I don't know what it was.
I just think it's now about achieving goals for single individuals that it doesn't really transpire into a culture. It's more of an individual achievement. Like there's no culture left. It's like if we're bringing, you know, all these rad pro surfers to the forefront, and they're all there with their families and friends, and they're doing their own thing. It was cool that Italo has his shirt and his family and friends. That was the only little vibe they had, is because he was going to win an event. But why aren't all those people there for Jamie O'Brien like it used to be? Like, Jamie used to have a big crew, and, you know, the crews would be pretty solid. I don't know. It's definitely a thing that I didn't see coming. The surf industry, I thought, was going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. Now it seems totally different. Like, Patagonia seems big now.
Do you think the Olympics are going to have a positive impact? You have any high hopes?
It didn't help snowboarding. It really didn't. Like, I'm really good friends with the Burtons and stuff, and they would always tell me that it's not like it helps sales, because it's such a mainstream thing. Like, they would probably buy Burton because they saw it in the Olympics and at like a phone cover or something. But it's not like that kid's going into the store because he grew up loving Burton anymore. It's like they just buy it because they see it on TV and stuff. It doesn't seem like it translates to a full, like almost like a cult, like Volcom and all those things. We're like a cult following. You would wear Volcom and think you're the only guy wearing it, with 40 other guys were in there wearing it. But you felt like, I'm Volcom guy, you know? Yeah. Nowadays, there's no vibe in all these brands, it seems like. I mean,
I mean, how do you feel when you go down there? You go to the to your old house at Pipeline. It just it's very corporate and safe. I mean, the waves are still what they are.
There's these little kids from out of town that are getting catered food made for them, and you're like, this isn't what it takes to be, you know, a gnarly pipe surfer. You want these kids to like learn how to take, like we used to have to surf with Dan Kealoha and Johnny Boy Gomes and the scariest people in the world. It was scarier to surf with those guys than the wave. You would have the heaviest wave in the world and the heaviest locals in the world, and you had to go out there and you weren't getting catered food and you certainly weren't getting your rent paid. You're out there just hoping that when you camped on the beach and you ran down the beach to try to get on Billabong surf team, you had to fight with Johnny Boy Gomes for the best wave back door. Now these kids wake up and they're getting massages. They're on their electric bikes down to Pipe and they go paddle out and then they go have a catered food. And it's like,
but I mean, is that the paradox of the WSL trying to make surfing into a quote unquote real sport? I mean, because you have to have that level of athleticism. You know, like there didn't used to be coaches and trainers and managers. But I mean, if you want to try and compete with the NFL, like
it's just better perks now, I guess. Like it's a smaller crew because it doesn't seem like there's as many pros now. Like they have gone from, say, there are 200 relevant pros on the winter of when I was a pro. Now it seems like about 80 really good ones and probably like 30. Like Evan Geiselman's and guys that are there. What's the other kid's name? Oliver Kurtz. And I saw them down there and they're getting photos. But it used to be a lot of free surfers. Like you would have Archie at Off the Wall and Christian Fletcher at Rocky Point and all these guys trying to get photos. And then you had the pros that were trying to win the Pipe Masters. It was just this big, giant thing. Now when I go down there, I just see little 12-year-old kids that look like they're maybe from the NSSA. And then you see over here, you don't see as many pros. So there's not as much money in it, it seems like. And then the ones that do make it, like the Griffin, Calipinto, and all the really good Groms, they're staying at the Billabong house. They got six setups. They got a rent-a-car that's paid for. They got it all. And I think they deserve it. I mean, let's be honest. I would have loved to have those perks, but it's just a different world now. And I don't think it's bad. I just think it's just evolution.
It's changed. It seems like changed. I guess it's maybe just a metaphor for economics as a whole. I mean, like the middle class of surfing is gone away.
It's gone away. It's true.
There's definitely money to be made.
But that's what I'm saying. It used to have a huge middle class. And I was a part of that middle class. Get like 80 grand a year. All you did is have to go get a huge barrel at back door with a sick water photographer and then maybe show up on another couple clips of the winner. And that made sense for the companies. Nowadays, that guy's irrelevant. It's like we have our guys in the Pipe Masters and we have one good free surfer and that's good enough for us. And that makes sense because they had to cut budgets. But it's just a different world. It's just hard to see. Because there's no print. That bugs me.
I mean, that's why, you know, it was really special to come over here, premiere this book this year in the state of where the culture is now. Just because I don't know how many more years I'm going to be able to come over. Or necessarily if there's just the moments and the culture that I was so inspired to document in the first place.
True.
You know?
You definitely got it.
At the same time, like, you know, there's no print media. Like, I don't know if I could think of anything less future forward than still photographs other than a printed book full of still photographs.
True. Yeah,
but at the same time, like people have been really
responsive. I like having those kind of books around because they're a piece of art, for sure.
And you know, I said at the talk story the other night, you know, there was a small handful of ambassadors who were always extremely useful and helpful and gracious of like getting doors to open for me. And I know from the beginning, you were somebody that really understood what I was trying to accomplish.
Oh,
and
like, I'm so grateful that I got
to Kelly's house for the first time. And, you know, like we're talking, of course you walk in, oh, of course, Eddie, of course there's a rock star there. Yeah, you know, like I feel like if Obama would have walked out and handed me a Primo, I'd been like, yeah, of course, we're Kelly's, you know?
Yeah. If you just followed Kelly around for 6 months, you'd have photos of every single gnarly person in the world.
But that, it also felt really special the other night. Just having like Brian Bielman and Tom Cervais like doing talk story and just so rootsy at the Sugar Mill.
That was
such a unique environment.
So many rad kids showed up too. All the kids were there.
And I love how when Thomas was showing his picture of Curran in the cutback, he like was underselling the description. Like Benji had to stand. Whoa, time out.
I can't believe that because he's talking about the moment of my whole childhood. I was 19. I remember like it was an hour ago. And I was sitting next to Taylor Steele, and he made this drop. And he didn't even tell about the whole wave or the wave before. He got a crazy one at back door, came out of that, caught the very next wave. Like, that's what made Tom Curran so crazy, is that he literally off the wall, I mean, back door, got crazy barrel. I'm like, oh, Tom. And it was on that board that was legendary, Maurice Cole, 7'6". He said it might even been bigger. But he gets the barrel back door, kicks out, and I just came in from surfing. I'm sitting there still dripping wet. He kicks out of that wave, paddles, and catches the next wave. Air drops under the lip, and it's one of the opening segments of Focus. I'm pretty sure it's Taylor Steele's focus movie. Airdrops under the lip, gets crazy barrel, comes out and does the best carve of. There's never been a better carve. Let's be completely honest. And Tom Cervais had all that, and he said, like, yeah, this is a picture of the 90s of some guy from Santa Barbara. I'm like, don't you dare. Don't you dare, Tom.
You're, like, personally offended by
his
description of his own picture.
You shot this photo. You should be very, very proud of the fact that it's my favorite photo, everybody's favorite photo, and we want to know more about it. But he's so humble, and he's such a cuddle bug. And same with Bielman. He's just like, they're both such humble people. They're like, yeah, this is Wave a Pipe, and they didn't want to, like, go into how hard it was to get that photo or what day it was. Or
yeah, I mean, Bielman definitely, like, really relished in the attention. Definitely, I was probably somewhere in the middle. Tom, not so much. But, I mean, I was planning on
so
just...
quiet.
I was planning... Well, I also lost my voice. So I lost my voice that night. I've never lost my voice in my life. But I had always just expected to press play and then just kind of have him roll. And then Paisel's like, no, got to do Talk Store, and kind of, like, towed me into that one. So
that's so great.
So I pulled up some pictures from over the years from here on the North Shore. And, like, for me personally, just, like, I have so many memories over here, and, like, these pictures really helped me kind of solidify them in my mind. So here, just scroll through it. Tell me if you can remember what was happening during any of these photos.
I can't tell you, but I love this photo. It's so great.
Do you remember that was up at the Analog House up on the hill?
Analog House, exactly. I think it was Chippa in the back.
The Chippa, Mike Marciano.
Yeah, that's who it is. And then Lugo. That's so great. I don't know. Are we drinking Ben? No, we're at Budweiser. That's even weirder. That's great. This photo, the photo that was really cool is the photo you got of me at the Analog House with a beer laughing. Kelly put on his fridge for like three winners. Do you remember that?
I do. I have it right here.
Yeah. That one's killer. Ross and I love that one.
Another situation. You
that
were the first.
One,
that was over.
Is that Chester's thing, right? Thanksgiving?
No. It was in front of. It was just a random day. Like another example of you just being like, you know what? Jump in my car. We're gonna go do something cool. And you took me over and introduced me to Ross for the first time. It was actually in front of his house with his kids. He was like pushing him into the waves.
Yeah, that's a Popeye Law. It's Popeye Law. That's what I thought it was. So this is down where we do Chester's memorial every year. That's what I thought it was. Yeah. That's cool. I don't even know this. That's Rocky Point for sure. I do remember that year. That was the same year we're laughing at some photo. That's cool. These are cool. I don't even. I can't believe you got these photos. I don't even remember.
Yeah, this is part of the. I got a deep bench.
You do. That's the one. So Kelly had that on his fridge. Where'd you get that? He's like Justin J. And that's why that made me happy, because the year before that was the year you got the Eddie photo, and I remember him going. You were like nervous and all this stuff about getting over there and stuff. And then when I saw that photo, I was like, damn, I'm so glad you came with me. And then by him having this photo on his fridge made me feel like he accepted you. It was like an amazing photographer for one, but the fact that he, you know, was like, hey, he's cool to come over here.
Yeah, just even last year, I don't do the whole situation. Did you see that photo or there's a story in the book where I went over there. And there was some woman who I'd never met before, and she had this like gray brick. It was like kind of plastic, and she's like, hey, will you help me hold this for a second? She got a screwdriver, and I'm like holding it. She opens it up, and these like gray wisps of dust are flying everywhere. I'm like, what the hell is happening? It was like Michael Peterson's ashes.
What?
That she had. I don't know if she was like a friend of the family. I don't think it was his widow. But anyway, she had Michael Peterson's ashes. She took him out of this plastic urn, urn, and put him into this little satchel, and Kelly paddled out at the beach park.
Oh, that's like, so nice.
And I just happened to be there for the whole thing, that's and so it was cool. Just like a really like spectacular.
She wanted
moment.
Him to go put some of him out there? That's
yeah,
really
so
cool.
I got an amazing picture of that. I put it in the book, but I sent that to her, and I sent that to him afterwards, and you know, he DM'd me back. He's like, thank you so much. Come by anytime. I feel like that was the first time I was really like, I felt like I had authority to just kind of like so drop by.
Yeah, yeah, and really when you get on Kelly's team, if you will, it feels really good because you know he has so many people pulling at him in every direction. That's why he always trusts me to bring whoever I want into his life, which is always really cool because, you know, everybody that gets a time from Kelly feels really important, and I get too much time with him, so it's like nice to share it, you know.
No, it was really, I mean, I guess I wish I had a better word to describe. I always make it, I feel like the North Shore is almost like mafia oriented in that it's an extremely closed circle until somebody like you or until somebody goes, no, he's one of us. He's a good fellow.
And
he vouches for you.
That's what we're missing nowadays. Because it used to be like where if you got in, it was an amazing feeling, and it was a big accomplishment. It kind of like our going back to what we were talking about earlier. It's like it almost feels like anyone can walk into the Hurley House right now. Anyone could just walk in there and be like, "Hey, let me grab a piece, a sandwich, and a drink," and and it's cool. But the coolest part about our little world in this surf culture, especially the North Shore, keep the country country, was it was like you had to earn it.
There was an exclusivity to it.
You had to earn it, and it was kind of like as a Howley, white, however you want to put it, you know, the definition of Howley is kind of tricky, but being a white guy over here, it was really scary, and it was very intimidating, and all the things that go along with it. But when you did break through, you felt really special. You felt I remember Laird Hamilton. I got this crazy weight off the wall, and he was mad that I got it because I was like 16, 17, and he knew me, and he was so nice to me all the time and all stuff. But he was angry because I got the kind of the wave of the day. And I remember pounding back out, and he was like angry, and he goes, "At least if I'm not gonna get it, I'm glad you got it." And I remember
that's the closest thing to a compliment.
Chills going through my body because at the time Laird was the guy, and I remember going, "Oh my god." He said, "At least it was me that got it." Like he actually cared that I got it. And I remember a bunch of different things happening, especially with Johnny Boy and all these things, and getting and hearing what they would say about me and giving me a little respect and like the littlest bit, but feeling like they had enough respect for me to actually consider that I was part of the whole scene, always made me feel special. And nowadays, like you can literally come here from Haiti and paddle out the pipeline and maybe get the wave of the day. That would never happen in my lifetime when I was a kid.
Yeah, I mean, what made it so unique is that, I mean, I live in New York. There's exclusivity all over the place, but a lot of it's based on really lame shit. Like money or just douchebaggery.
Who you know
or,
to get who into
you
that
know
club.
Or whatever. Like at the end of the day, all of that exclusivity, for lack of a better word, here was based on like a meritocracy.
Very true. And that's why, I mean, that's what made it legit. You know, legitimacy of being out and getting the wave of the guy from California, the wave of the winner, it didn't just get handed to him. It wasn't like that. So when you would hear it, you'd be like, "Whoa, how did that happen?" And you break down how it all got there. And it was 6 months getting smoked. He broke his arm. He got that fixed. He went back out there, got beat up because he dropped into the wrong guy. Boom, got it back out there. Did it again. Got the wave of the winner. It was like, holy shit. I mean, I remember my best wave of my life is that backdoor and drifting. It's Robin Chiodo's movie. It's just second reef, giant backdoor barrel, biggest barrel of my life. And the three waves before that, I almost got killed. I got so killed. I got smoked all the way to the beach. I'm a little 19-year-old kid. And Machado was watching from the deck. And I paddled back out. Smoked again. I think I hit my whole side of my body. Was all cut up. Went back out. Smoked again. And we have footage of it all. And I just smoked, wave of my life. And it was because I didn't give up. I didn't stop, and I just kept going. And nowadays, I go, "How did I do that?" Like that resilience is what it takes.
That yearn to please, that learn to be accepted. All of those,
everything. I was 19, and I wanted to prove myself. I was really good at pipeline because I lived there. Everyone was watching, and no one knew how to surf pipeline. Like kind of like I don't want to sound cocky, but I knew the conditions better than anyone. It was a north northwest. And it was second reef, so you could get them early. And there was this crazy sandbar at back door. And I knew there was going to be just the waves of the year, waves of the lifetime. And I knew it. And I had Jake Patterson actually dropped in on me. And I'm screaming, "Hey!" And he kicks out right when the video starts of me going in the barrel. And me and Jake still talk about it. He's like, "Fuck, I almost had it." But he didn't live there. And he didn't put the time in. And I got behind him, and I got the wave. And that's what it takes when you put your time in, you know the way better than everybody, the conditions are what you need to really excel, because I wasn't very good on 6 to 8 foot pipe because I wasn't that amazing at airdrop backside barrels. I just like roll-ins on these rights that no one wanted a part of because they were so gnarly in the inside that everyone else was like, "Fuck that." And Dorian and Chesser would want those waves. So I grew up in this tiny little circle of people that were crazy enough to go on these second reef rights. And it all came together for me because I put the time in it and I didn't give up. There was so many times that day I should have just went in and just sat there and went, "Fuck, I'm going to die if I go do this again."
But you think it was like those gnarly elders who weren't going to give you respect off the bat? You think that helped with the determination?
Oh, yeah. The reason why that all happened is because on the smaller days, I wasn't getting any waves because I'm a skinny white kid. Even though I lived there and even though I put my time in, Sonny, Johnny, the list would go for days if I could tell you the whole list. Those guys always got them. So you were like, and you weren't mad about it. You're just like, oh, Sonny. You would hear, oh, and you're like, of course I'm not going. Get out of his way. And on those days, I knew I had a chance because those guys weren't hassling for those giant 12-foot double-ups. And I knew to make myself relevant on those 6- to 8-foot days, I had to charge a 12, 15-foot backdoor wave, and I had to do it a lot. I had to put my time in. So on the 6-foot day, when I waited and they saw that I was waiting, they're like, fuck, it's, you know, he's been putting his time in. Give it to him. And it started happening where Sonny and guys like that were like, go, 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 go. When you start hearing the gnarliest guys in the lineup going, go, 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 Benji, go, you're like, oh, my life is okay now. Like, everything was so amazing. So, like, that feeling for kids now, they just got to go out there and just go.
Well, what factors changed that culture?
All the gnarly local guys are gone now. Like, we don't even have any.
And then, but there isn't, like, there's the new crop's not really about that?
No, the new crop, we're just, we lost all the hard-hitting, you know, guys. Like, we don't have the, there's no more Kalas, Kyborgs, Sunnies. There's no more Sunnies, Danky Alohas, Johnny Boy Gomes. There's none of that anymore. Even the young pro servers from Hawaii are like Seth Moniz and like that's, the sweetest not, little guys yeah. ever.
Like people defer, but out of respect, yeah. not out of fear.
Yeah. Yeah, like now it's about just respect and not fear. Like there used to be where I was more scared about the guys than the waves at Pipe when I was in the 80s and 90s. You would paddle out and be like, fuck, please don't punch me in the face. You know, you're a little skinny kid, you know, that's, we're talking about guys that are scary for Mike Tyson would probably be intimidated by.
Yeah, it was funny. I had dinner the other night at the Coffins and Rich was talking about, it's like, oh yeah, I saw McNamara today just lighting somebody up on the beat. I'm not talking about lighting him up. And I'm like, whoa, seriously? Like, was he okay?
He's
like,
just yelling.
Yeah, he's like, oh, no, just yelling. Yeah,
so stupid. It's like, well, Liam was doing that in the 80s and 90s, too. Same thing.
But I was on my heels for a second. I'm like, really? Yeah, wow, like, I missed
Marvin
that.
Marvin Foster, when we were kids, was so scary that you could have put him in a movie, and he was scarier than the villains. Like, he would have cigarettes rolled in his shirt. He drove a tow truck and would just sit there and look at you, and you'd be like, I'm going to die right now. Like, he's looking at me. I'm going to die. He's looking at me. You know, like, he was that terrifying. And he did what the bad guy did. Like, you know, he was not going to just walk by if he had a problem. He was just so amazing. He was one of the best servers and one of the scariest guys ever. And just those people don't come around anymore. I mean, I guess it's good for the kids to not have that in their life. But it made me feel important to be in part of that culture. Like,
at what point did Kelly go from your experiences to being like Kelly Slater and having like a particular status out there?
Well, the first year he ever hung out with all of us was that Black and White movie, Kelly Slater, Black and White. And he just caught like little 6-foot lefts and got a couple barrels and got a couple backdoor barrels. And it was cute, to say the least. It was like, you know, at that time, me, Jack, Storian and Ross, we're all surfing pipe and had a few years under our belt comparable. So I remember thinking, well, he's supposedly the best surfer coming out, and he already won a few contests, but he was still wet behind the ears. And I remember thinking, I don't know. I remember thinking, yeah, it's good, but I don't know. And then the next year, he got that crazy wave where it doubles up. It's in the momentum movie, and it just unloads, and he comes out, and he throws his arms up. That was a surfboard that Al shaped the night before. I have a shaping room, and I was involved in the whole thing. He made it in one night, which back then, it was so rare to get a board made in one day. And Al made that board. He got that wave, got fifth at Pipe. And we're like, damn, Kelly, that was, you know, like that was from here to here in one year. And then I promise you, every other year, it became the Kelly Show. It was just, it took him 3 seasons, and then it was the Kelly Show. And just like anything he does, he just every year would get a better lineup, better this, more better board, this, not. And it became where 28 Pipe Masters later, he's won 7, and he's made something like he had 22nd place or something. And so I don't know. Now he's got another third. So
what's your connection with like surfing in California? Like, have you spent time? I know you have.
I lived
in
Cali for so long. I actually left after Chester died when I was like 23 or 24. I moved to Cali because of a girl, and because I felt that, this is pretty revealing, but I felt like I was more suited for sponsorship in California, which is totally wrong, because if I just stayed at Pipe, I would have been like Jamie O'Brien. I would have been way better off. People would have, you know, I would have been better. I mean, I could have
been like the local pipe specialist.
I could have been the pipe specialist and done the whole thing because I was really good at pipe back then. But I decided, and a couple reasons why. Two, I just lost my best friend in big waves. And I was getting to a point where I get anxiety when I surf big waves. And I was like starting to think, well, if my hero and the guy that I legitimately looked up to, and he was the strongest, most fit guy in the world, drown, what's it going to do to me? You know, I had all this doubt starting to build. And Billabong was my sponsor. And they were like, if you come to California, you can be the California Kid. And we have way more things for you to do here. And then I thought, like, Taylor Steele's movies were based out of California at the time. And I was like, I could film with Taylor and all this stuff. And so I moved to Taylor Steele's hometown. I bought a house there and everything. And I left Hawaii. And I felt like traveling and getting out of Hawaii was the thing to do. And it was. I actually believe that all the things, decisions I made is the reason why I was sponsored for... I got sponsored at 14 and retired at 38. So... whatever that is, like 20-something, 5-4 years, something like that, of being sponsored to surf is pretty incredible. I mean, I had a lot of friends that were a lot almost better and more talented than me that only lasted 10 years or 5 years. I had longevity because I adapted to all the different changes.
Oh, yeah, I mean, especially look at today, talent is not nearly enough. Like, everyone's talented.
You've got to have – my thing was I was a corporation. Like, my sponsors, I was my own manager. I always negotiated my own contracts. I did everything on my own, and I based it on what I was going to do the next year. So I would create my year and look at everybody else that would be like, I'm 32nd in the WQS, and that was their value to this company. And I'd be like, but they didn't get one photo in the magazine, and nobody even cared. What does that mean? So I'd go behind them and negotiate my contract and be like, I'm not 38th in the world, but you know what I am? I'm going to be on this TV show. I'm going to be in Taylor Steele's movie. We have 15 premieres going worldwide. We're doing this.
I'm going to add these three magazines. I'm going to add this to the brand.
And I'm going to sell your brand. And they would be like, so I had this guy tell me when I negotiated one of my last contracts, go, dude, you're like a corporation. Because I actually got it to at the end where I had 5 outlets to promote their companies. And they were all legit signed contracts with these things. And they're like, dude, you already have your planned. And I'm like, and for a little surfer kid coming behind me and negotiating, he looked like an asshole because I'm like, I had it wired. Yeah. I was like, look, you guys, I'm going to put your stuff out there. And I knew how to sell it. And so I became the corporation in my selling myself, which is not easy. And it's very hard to sell yourself. Like, that's the one thing I have big ego like everybody else probably. But it was so hard to sell yourself when they're like, you don't really think you're worth that. And you're like, I am, you know, and you're like, fuck. So like selling your own personal value to somebody that knows who you are is very difficult. And it's something I got really good at and lasted forever. I could have even got sponsored again, but I felt guilty. I felt like Kelly doesn't feel guilty, but I feel guilty that I was like taking money from these kids for these sponsors, which it isn't really like that. It's value. Like at the end of the day, I was just going through my own shit and I felt like, you know, everyone's looking at me as this old guy and he's not ripping his heart and he's taking money and this and that. So I just kind of went like, I've had the best run ever. But just like Bob Hurley the other day telling me, he goes, I had nothing, no complaints, dude. 40 years I've been running shit. And for me, 28 years of a pro career, I was like, no regrets, nothing. And now it's about just like supporting the other kids. And that's what's been my...
But what gets you inspired like free surfing these days? Like what do you still have?
I think that's the hardest thing about surfing nowadays is I want to keep progressing and you can't. And that's why Kelly's an anomaly. It's like for you to keep doing nose pick, full rotation rodeos and just all the tricks that he's learned in his 40s, let's be honest, 40s, he's becoming one of the best aerialists in the world. Is such a feat that nobody really gives him credit for because I can tell you firsthand, I was my last Taylor Steele par was 36, something like that. And I have a few airs in it and a few progressive stuff. And I remember thinking, like, I'm trying my hardest, which I've always done, but I would achieve that. And I was trying my hardest and not pulling off the stuff I was trying and just getting frustrated and being like, I think it's over. Like, I can't keep going because my body won't allow me to do a huge into the flats air, land full on and spin out of it because I'm going to blow my knee out or I'm going to do this. So it became, because I'm a big guy too, for one, but to see Kelly be able to keep progressing, it's just a mind-boggling experience because it's the hardest sport to do as an older person surfing. So when I surf now, I like style. I've always loved style and I like cars, so I can always go back to that. But it's hard not to do airs now because when I'm going against speed, I'm like, I'm going to do a huge air. And my body's like, don't do it.
Is that the curse of being like so...
Yeah, because I can't
such
go,
a ripper at such
soft.
A young age. I mean, are you going to be able? Are you going to be able to age gracefully and ride mid length and just have fun?
I don't know.
Or are you going to throw? Are you going to throw in the towel and just focus on golf?
I don't know, that's such a good question.
What happens when you're 60?
Year. I got all my new Channel Island boards. Shout out to Channel Island. They just gave me all these new boards. And I made them a little thicker this year. But it's like, I don't want to ride fun boards, you know, or fishes and stuff. I just can't do it yet. And I don't think I ever want to. I think it's just because I always want to do what I've always done. And that's going to be the hardest thing I've ever dealt with, is not being able to do what I want to do. I think it's tough. It's so frustrating to watch it. Like watching those kids yesterday, I'm like, I can do all this because it's pipe. But then when they come out of the barrel and do like a 10-foot fucking air, I'm just like, damn it, I can't do that anymore. But yeah, surfing's great. That's what makes it great, is, you know, the fact that Slater has shown that you can at 47 compete with 22-year-old kids is mind-boggling, because we have the hardest sport. There's nothing harder than surfing. It's nothing.
So what's gonna take that place in your heart moving forward? Like what?
I think it's going to be family, podcasts, golf, and relationships. I think that's it. And traveling. Because now when I travel, I'm doing a lot of writing too. I think my next step is going to be traveling, writing about my travels, because I know how to express it. I'm just, I don't do it enough. I need
writing.
To write.
I think like writing and filmmaking are one of small handful of art forms where you can survive until you're late. You can actually even progress.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Kubrick.
Sure. I just started writing.
Like music, young man's game.
Yeah.
Surfing, you know, definitely a young man's game. But no, that's terrific.
It. Yeah.
So I guess moving forward, what's in store for the next year? You're excited about family? I think you'd be a terrific dad.
Yeah, I can't wait to start a family. I really want to start my podcast because I need to do therapeutic stuff. Like just talking for me has always been therapeutic. I want to progress like Kelly does, doing different things. Like me and my wife are really into yoga, different things to prolong my activities, because I'm going snowboarding in Montana tomorrow. And I still want to do all these crazy stuff with board sports. And you got it. The only way you do that is if you stay in crazy shape.
Yeah.
So just taking care of myself and getting healthy this year is my goal.
That sounds like an amazing trip. So, I mean, I guess it's almost impossible to overstate the impact that Jake had on the sport of snowboarding and the culture. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on like why he was so special to you. What was your relationship like?
Well, he searched me out when I was 22 or 23. I was in Brazil. I was right when emails came out, as old as I sound. But it was right when emails started coming out. And I was in Brazil for a surf contest. I rode for Reebok at the time. And at that time, I was kind of the cool kid in town. And I get this email from John Carpenter, which is Jake's real name is John Carpenter. And it says, hey, I got this shoe company I'm going to try. It ends up being called Gravis. And he goes, I've talked to a lot of people. They said that you're the guy for the job. Would you like to come to New York? Just look at the project. And if you don't, no strings attached, you don't have to sign a contract. Just want you to get your opinion. I get to this round table in New York City, and it's Spencer Fujimoto is a pro skater at the time, a big time skater. And then Brian Iguchi for snowboarding. And the guys from Supreme, Pookie from Supreme, was the retail guy that came in. We all sat in this little room with, it was a Puma and Adidas, I think, were the two designers. And they had these moon boots on these pictures. I mean, they look like moon boots. I just said it. I mean, they were freaking disgusting. They were so horrible. They were huge and they were so bad. Look like moon boots. And we're sitting, and right behind us is this older, not older, he's only 40 or something at the time. He had a flannel shirt, kind of scraggly hair. And he was in the back, so I didn't really pay too much attention to him because there were designers up here talking and stuff. And it was us four, the four athletes that they have, three athletes and one guy. So we're sitting there looking at it, and we're being assholes. We're like, this is horrible. I'd never wear this shit. This is crazy.
Being honest.
Walks up, at the end of the meeting, this guy in the flannel comes over, and he goes, hey, I just want to tell you guys, I'm so grateful for you to come here. And right then I look at Spencer, the skater kid, because he didn't know who Jake was either. And he goes, I look at Spencer and I go, we are such pieces of shit. I think this is John Carpenter. And I still didn't know that it was the guy Jake Burton. I didn't know it was a human at the time, which is crazy, because come to find out the whole story that I know better than anybody now. He came over and he goes, you guys, I'm so grateful for all your insight. And me and Spencer said, hey, I am so embarrassed and so sorry. He goes, no. That's exactly what I needed to hear. And he goes, you guys don't have to sign contracts, none of that stuff. And so that meeting ends, and we end up going outside. We roll a doobie. We're all hanging out. We're all smoking. We're all kind of getting to know each other. And I was like, wow, this is this the guy that owns the company? And then Pookie goes, dude, you have no idea. This is Jake Burton. He owns the fucking thing. He started snowboarding. And I'm like, oh God, I'm such a kook. And so I leave that trip, still signed with Reebok, and I get back in Surfer magazine. It was back in the day where you'd go to Surfer like once a week to check in and look at photos and just kind of be a part of it. And I go in there, and the editor and the other kid that worked there, I go, hey, did you ever go to that New York thing? And I go, yeah, I did. And they're like, Jake Burton called us. And I come to find out he called so many people on my behalf to find out about me randomly. And that it's still humbling to this day, because I believe it's bigger than life, because my life that became all about Jake and his family and being part of his whole existence. I rode for all of his companies, Anon, Analog, Gravis, Channel Islands, everybody. It became my life. Started because he researched me for the Surfer role for his company. And I did 100 roundtables. I stayed with his companies for, I almost say 18 years. But during all that, we became like literally the only person in my life that could understand me without me making a noise out of my mouth. Like, I would look at him, you know, like, and we just were so two peas. Like, he was the one that got me the most. So we became tight as thieves. Ended up, he canceled all his companies that I rode for, and I decided to retire because I didn't want to go to another company. I didn't want to try to keep being a pro surfer. I ended up stopping that. And for the last, that's been 7 years. Last 7 years, all I've done is travel with him, snowboarding and surfing and hanging out and becoming close as hell. And I'm at his funeral the other day, and I have Sean White, Mark McMorris, and Terry Hawkinson, all these guys, we're all having drinks, and it's at his funeral. And I go, you know what's funny? I go, all of us have done some rad shit in our life. I'm like, you know, especially a couple of you guys who've done some really amazing things. I go, but none of us have anything to really hold a candle to Jake's legacy. I go, there's going to be people in 200 years going down some crazy fucking ice glacier thing in Haiti or wherever the fuck. And they're going to be writing Jake. They're going to be writing Jake Burton's board, knowing the story that this asshole from Long Island started. His legacy is going to go on forever. And I can't even turn my head one way or the other without seeing something that everything is about Jake in my life, because that to me has been the most important figure in my life. And I was handpicked to be in his life, which means so much to me. So our little life together has changed everything for me. And now I'm going somewhere with his family for Christmas, and they're everything to me. It's like my family was always amazing. My mom's always been there, but he showed me how to become a man and how to be honest with myself and not to be scared to be my, I mean, honestly, that video, the footage of me and the Momentum Generation comes from a lot of therapy with Jake, like him telling me when I was feeling sorry for myself and him saying, nobody cares. No one cares about your surf career or any of that shit. He's like, show me something today. You know, he was hard love, and I needed that. I didn't have enough dad to do any of that stuff. So and that's why he was the greatest man I've ever known, is he legitimately woke up every day going, I got to prove to the world that this is what's happening. And he was always on the go, always trying to achieve something, always trying to be greater than the day before. He's Kelly, but on 10 times the level. That's how great Jake was.
Wow, you're blessed to have some really special people.
Too many good people in my life. I'm so grateful for it. Tell you what.
Well, I'll tell you what. I feel blessed to be one of them, man. And I want to say thank you for
sitting down. Love you, Jay.
Cheers, man. Love you too.
Yeah, peace out.
This episode of The Plug was produced by Bucci, with audio engineering and original music by Peter Buckingham. Thanks for listening, and a huge thanks to today's guests for dropping in. If you like this episode, hit subscribe and be sure to tune in for future conversations.
And don't forget to post your job for free at linkedin.com/surf. That's linkedin.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.